Success Live with the Reverend Donald Gordon Carty, Ph.D. Segment 29, The Master Key System by Charles F. Hennell, with Donald Gordon Carty. Part 8. The original Master Key System writings, available only through referrals from one person to another, were a closely guarded secret in Europe for decades, a century ago. They were considered essentially secret wisdom teachings amongst primarily only the very wealthy, a testament to the worth of the esoteric techniques disclosed. In 1912, Charles F. Hennell published this body of knowledge as a work which he presented as The Master Key System. This material was distributed as a weekly correspondence course. 24 parts, including a transmittal letter and questions and answers, were sent to students who sought more out of life. The Master Key System had been out of print for some time, except for a few copies available in rare bookstores where the prices reflect the rarity. Motivational speakers and gurus have used this material as the foundation for seminars that cost as much as $20,000 per day to sponsor. Aggressive companies, seeing the power of the course, have placed it on audio cassette, enhancing the original work, making it more 21st century compatible, and selling this material from $400 to over $1,000. Some include on-site seminars and some include weekly telephone mentoring. But even with more attempts to bring this material to the limelight, only a very small percentage of the world's population has ever seen this material. It's no wonder the ultra-rich and incredibly successful individuals stay that way. These secrets have been guarded since they were first introduced. Just look at the self-improvement section at your local bookstore, and you'd think you'd have to read 100 self-development books to stand the slightest chance at achieving success. Fragments of Hennell's work appear in the material and messages of present-day gurus like Napoleon Hill, Earl Nightingale, Tony Robbins, Stephen Covey, and countless others. Unfortunately, these fragments often turn out to be just watered-down versions of Hennell's work. But somehow there is a significant step beyond awakening your inner giant, finding the habits of the successful, reading The Science of Getting Rich, or listening to The Strangest Secret. Motivational sessions are great, but have proven to be only temporary. That is why, after being motivated, we find ourselves battling the same struggles when the motivational pump-you-up session wanes. We can derive absolutely no benefit from books, seminars, experiences, environment, or anything else until we have created brain cells capable of receiving the thought. Our world within is an exact correspondence of the world without. Suppose for a moment that you are familiar with the Hebrew language. A book might be given to you with the most beautiful thoughts written in the most wonderful language, but it would mean nothing to you until you had made yourself acquainted with the Hebrew language, and so with everything else. No thought, no idea, no experience has any value for us until we are capable of receiving it. For this reason, the same thought would make absolutely no impression upon one man, while it would be received with amazement and delight by another. The first man has formed no brain cells capable of receiving it. The second man is ready for it. He understands the beauties contained in the idea. With the Master Key System, you will be amazed before you are halfway through the exercises and lessons. As you are enabled to think greater, deeper, higher, and more forceful thoughts, the brain cells are refined, they become more powerful, and they are enabled to receive finer vibrations. This is not only true in the material, the mental and spiritual world, but in the physical world. As the ear becomes trained in music, is it enabled to receive finer vibrations, until the trained musician can hear harmonies of sound which the ordinary person is entirely unaware. We do not need to laboriously shovel the darkness out of a room before letting in the light. All that is necessary is to turn on the light, and the darkness vanishes. As you progress through the lessons, follow the instructions, and master the exercises, you will begin to show the characteristic signs of a general awakening. You will find optimism shining through the mist of doubt and unrest. This optimism is taking the form of illumination. As the illumination becomes general, fear, anger, doubt, selfishness, and greed pass away. you will be anticipating a more general realization of the truth, which will set you free. With the Master Key system, you don't have to read hundreds of books, just one. Now, for the first time since Charles Hanel first introduced this enlightening home study course material, you can now study it in the way it was originally intended and distributed, one lesson per week. A new edition with Donald Gordon Cardi contains, in addition to the complete 24-part Master Key system, sections like Reflection, which will serve as time markers, Hourly Helps, which will instruct you on how to handle the things which wear soul, spirit, and body almost to the snapping point, a section titled Interpreting the Word, which is a glossary of certain terms, and an explanation of the 12 universal laws as described today. The secret to all you need to get what you want out of life, health, wealth, and love is already within you. Now is the time to open it. Introduction, Part 8. In this part, you will find that you may freely choose what you think, but the result of your thought is governed by an immutable law. Is not this a wonderful thought? Is it not wonderful to know that our lives are not subject to caprice or variability of any kind, that they are governed by law? This stability is our opportunity, because by complying with the law, we can secure the desired effect with invariable precision. It is the law which makes the universe one grand peon of harmony. If it were not for law, the universe would be a chaos instead of a cosmos. Here, then, is the secret of the origin of both good and evil. This is all the good and evil there ever was or ever will be. Let me illustrate. Thought results in action. If your thought is constructive and harmonious, the result will be good. If your thought is destructive or inharmonious, the result will be evil. There is, therefore, but one law, one principle, one cause, one source of power, and good and evil are simply words which have been coined to indicate the result of our action, or our compliance or noncompliance with this law. The importance of this is well illustrated in the lives of Emerson and Carlyle. Emerson loved the good, and his life was a symphony of peace and harmony. Carlyle hated the bad, and his life was a record of perpetual discord and inharmony. Here we have two grand men, each intent upon achieving the same ideal, but one makes use of constructive thought and is therefore in harmony with natural law, the other makes use of destructive thought and therefore brings upon himself discord of every kind and character. It is evident, therefore, that we are to hate nothing, not even the bad, because hatred is destructive, and we shall soon find that by entertaining destructive thought we are sowing the wind, and in turn shall reap the whirlwind. Part 8. 1. Thought contains a vital principle, because it is the creative principle of the universe, and by its nature will combine with other similar thoughts. 2. As the one purpose of life is growth, all principles underlying existence must contribute to give it effect. Thought, therefore, takes form, and the law of growth eventually brings it into manifestation. 3. You may freely choose what you think, but the result of your thought is governed by an immutable law. Any line of thought persisted in cannot fail to produce its result in the character, health, and circumstances of the individual. Methods whereby we can substitute habits of constructive thinking for those which we have found produce only undesirable effects are therefore of primary importance. 4. We all know that this is by no means easy. Mental habits are difficult to control, but it can be done, and the way to do it is to begin at once to substitute constructive thought for destructive thought. Form the habit of analyzing every thought. If it is necessary, if its manifestation in the objective will be a benefit, not only to yourself, but to all whom it may affect in any way, keep it, treasure it. It is of value. It is in tune with the infinite. It will grow and develop and produce fruit 100-fold. On the other hand, it will be well for you to keep this quotation from George Matthew Adams in mind. Learn to keep the door shut. Keep out of your mind, out of your office, and out of your world every element that seeks admittance with no definite helpful end in view. 5. If your thought has been critical or destructive and has resulted in any condition of discord or inharmony in your environment, it may be necessary for you to cultivate a mental attitude which will be conducive to constructive thought. 6. The imagination will be found to be great assistance in this direction. The cultivation of the imagination leads to the development of the ideal out of which your future will emerge. 7. The imagination gathers up the material by which the mind weaves the fabric in which your future is to be clothed. 8. Imagination is the light by which we can penetrate new worlds of thought and experience. 9. Imagination is the mighty instrument by which every discoverer, every inventor, opened the way from precedent to experience. Precedent said, it cannot be done. Experience said, it is done. 10. Imagination is a plastic power, molding the things of sense into new forms and ideals. 11. Imagination is the constructive form of thought which must precede every constructive form of action. 12. A builder cannot build a structure of any kind until he has first received the plans from the architect, and the architect must get them from his imagination. 13. The captain of industry cannot build a giant corporation which may coordinate hundreds of smaller corporations and thousands of employees and utilize millions of dollars of capital until he has first created the entire work in his imagination. Objects in the material world are as clay in the potter's hand. It is in the mastermind that the real things are created, and it is by the use of the imagination that the work is done. In order to cultivate the imagination, it must be exercised. Exercise is necessary to cultivate mental muscle as well as physical muscle. It must be supplied with nourishment, or it cannot grow. 14. Do not confuse imagination with fancy, or that form of daydreaming in which some people like to indulge. Daydreaming is a form of mental dissipation which may lead to mental disaster. 15. Constructive imagination means mental labor, by some considered to be the hardest kind of labor, but, if so, it yields the greatest returns, for all the great things in life have come to men and women who had the capacity to think, to imagine, and to make their dreams come true. 16. When you have become thoroughly conscious of the fact that mind is the only creative principle, that it is omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent, and that you can consciously come into harmony with this omnipotence through your power of thought, you will have taken a long step in the right direction. 17. The next step is to place yourself in position to receive this power. As it is omnipresent, it must be within you. We know that this is so because we know that all power is from within, but it must be developed, unfolded, cultivated. In order to do this, we must be receptive, and this receptivity is acquired just as physical strength is gained by exercise. 18. The law of attraction will certainly and unerringly bring to you the conditions, environment, and experiences in life corresponding with your habitual, characteristic, predominant mental attitude. Not what you think once in a while when you are in church or have just read a good book, but your predominant mental attitude is what counts. 19. You cannot entertain weak, harmful, negative thoughts 10 hours a day and expect to bring about beautiful, strong, and harmonious conditions by 10 minutes of strong, positive, creative thought. 20. Real power comes from within. All power that anybody can possibly use is within man, only waiting to be brought into visibility by his first recognizing it, and then affirming it as his, working it into his consciousness until he becomes one with it. 21. People say that they desire abundant life, and so they do, but so many interpret this to mean that if they will exercise their muscles or breathe scientifically, eat certain foods in certain ways, drink so many glasses of water every day, or just a certain temperature, keep out of drafts, they will attain the abundant life they seek. The result of such methods is but indifferent. However, when man awakens to the truth and affirms his oneness with all life, he finds that he takes on the clear eye, the elastic step, the vigor of youth. He finds that he has discovered the source of all power. 22. All mistakes are but the mistakes of ignorance. Knowledge gaining and consequent power is what determines growth and evolution. The recognition and demonstration of knowledge is what constitutes power, and this power is spiritual power, and this spiritual power is the power which lies at the heart of all things. It is the soul of the universe. 23. This knowledge is the result of man's ability to think. Thought is therefore the germ of man's conscious evolution. When man ceases to advance in his thoughts and ideals, his forces immediately begin to disintegrate, and his continence gradually registers these changing conditions. 24. Successful men make it their business to hold ideals of the conditions which they wish to realize. They constantly hold them in mind, the next step necessary to the ideal for which they are striving. Thoughts are the materials with which they build, and the imagination is their mental workshop. Mind is the ever-moving force with which they secure the persons and circumstance necessary to build their success structure, and the imagination is the matrix in which all great things are fashioned. 25. If you have been faithful to your ideal, you will hear the call when circumstances are ready to materialize your plans, and results will correspond in the exact ratio of your fidelity to your ideal. The ideal, steadily held, is what predetermines and attracts the necessary conditions for its fulfillment. 26. It is thus that you may weave a garment of spirit and power into the web of your entire existence. It is thus that you may lead a charmed life and be forever protected from all harm. It is thus that you may become a positive force whereby conditions of opulence and harmony may be attracted to you. 27. This is the leaven which is gradually permeating the general consciousness and is largely responsible for the conditions of unrest which are everywhere evident. 28. In the last part you created a mental image. You brought it from the invisible into the visible. This week I want you to take an object and follow it back to its origination. See of what it really consists. If you do this, you will develop imagination, insight, perception, and sagacity. These come not by the superficial observation of the multitude, but by a keen analytical observation which sees below the surface. 29. It is the few who know that the things which they see are only effects, and understand the causes by which these effects were brought into existence. 30. Take the same position as heretofore and visualize a battleship. See the grim monster floating on the surface of the water. There appears to be no life anywhere about. All is silence. You know that by far the largest part of the vessel is under the water, out of sight. You know that the ship is as large and as heavy as a 20-story skyscraper. You know that there are hundreds of men ready to spring to their appointed task instantly. You know that every department is in charge of able, trained, skilled officials who have proven themselves confident to take charge of this marvelous piece of mechanism. You know that although it lies apparently oblivious to everything else, it has eyes which see everything for miles around, and nothing is permitted to escape its watchful vision. You know that while it appears quiet, submissive, and innocent, it is prepared to hurl a steel projectile weighing thousands of pounds at an enemy many miles away. This and much more you can bring to mind with comparatively no effort whatever. But how did the battleship come to be where it is? How did it come into existence in the first place? All of this you want to know if you are a careful observer. 31. Follow the great steel plates through the foundries. See the thousands of men employed in their production. Go still further back and see the ore as it comes from the mine. See it loaded on barges or cars. See it melted and properly treated. Go back still farther and see the architect and engineers who planned the vessel. Let thought carry you back still further in order to determine why they planned the vessel. You will see that you are now so far back that the vessel is something intangible. It no longer exists. It is now only a thought existing in the brain of the architect. But from where did the order come to plan the vessel? Probably the Secretary of Defense. But probably this vessel was planned long before the war was thought of, and that Congress had to pass a bill appropriating the money. Possibly there was opposition, and speeches for or against the bill. Whom do these congressmen represent? They represent you and me, so that our line of thought begins with the battleship and ends with ourselves. And we find in the last analysis that our own thought is responsible for this and many other things of which we seldom think. And a little further reflection will develop the most important fact of all, and that is, if someone had not discovered the law by which this tremendous mass of steel and iron could be made to float upon the water instead of immediately going to the bottom, the battleship could not have come into existence at all. 32. This law is that the specific gravity of any substance is the weight of any volume of it compared with an equal volume of water. The discovery of this law revolutionized every kind of ocean travel, commerce and warfare, and made the existence of the battleship, aircraft carriers, and cruise ships possible. 33. You will find exercises of this kind invaluable. When the thought has been trained to look below the surface, everything takes on a different appearance. The insignificant becomes significant. The uninteresting, interesting. The things which we suppose to be of no importance are seen to be the only real vital things in existence. This segment sponsored by the Personal Development Institute. Please visit them at www.thepdi.com or www.personaldevelopmentinstitute.com. Thank you for listening. Have a great day. Bye for now. Success Live with the Reverend Donald Gordon Carty, Ph.D.